Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Lavatory. Gonna love that, Tory. Yeah.
Hello and welcome to Two in the Think Tank, the show where we come up with
five
sketch ideas.
You're Andy.
I am.
Who am I? Say my name.
Why change now? You're you're Alistair. You're Alistair.
George William Chomblay Birchall. Hello. Andy. We were just discussing, and just we may as well just put it here. About that you thought the term front bottom could also mean penis.
Yeah, I mean, I'd always thought it had. I talk about it all the time. Often during sex, I talk about my front bottom, you know. It's one of the I thought it was cool, you know.
Yeah. You, like as in like that was the temperature of your front bottom? My front bottom is cool.
Isn't that a normal thing to say? The temperature of my front bottom is low relative to the, you know, body, rest of my body temperature.
Body. Yes, well.
Is this not normal sex?
I mean, I could imagine that maybe if you had just like, let's say you got out of the shower and you dried a lot of your body, but you hadn't dried your junk yet.
Yeah.
And then you were in the position of kind of like a little bit like in the plank position, you know, sort of above your beloved. And you were just noticing in your very breezy room how you were saying, my front bottom is cool because of the all the air that passes through the rural air.
Yeah, rural area that I am living in. And there's no good windows or walls.
That's right.
We're outdoors. We're in a paddock scenario.
Well, there's no wall that can contain the drafts out there.
That's true.
You know, at least I have a neighbor. I have a neighbor whose wall at least partially protects my wall. So even if my wall was full of holes.
Alistair, we are actually on a wind farm. And around this time of year, the boy wind starts to get very interested in the girl winds, and they get, you know, the winds start charging at each other with great force.
Ah,
and
yes.
Love. Sometimes they can.
The courting.
You know.
The courting.
The rutting of the winds.
The rutting? I don't know what the rutting is.
Alistair, how would you feel
if
I came to you with a sketch suggestion, which is for a wind farm, right? But it's a guy who farms wind. Now,
John Oliver did that bit in his comedy album years ago. About over farming the wind. And then we probably also did a little bit about that. But, you know, about over farming the wind and then kites laying limp on the ground.
Oh, I don't remember that at all. But that's not what I'm not focusing on that part of it. I'm focusing on the wind husbandry aspect of having to, you know, look after the wind, feed the wind.
So you're rather than a crop, you're treating it as an animal.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's right.
That's
cattle.
Fresh, brand new. That's brand new. John Oliver would not touch that.
Wonderful topical thing of wind farming. You seen these wind farms?
Yeah. Wind, what about, you know, riding the wind like a bull?
Yeah. Yeah, sure. A wind rodeo. That'd be great. You could, I mean, that's more or less what paragliding is, a kind of wind rodeo.
Yeah. Like, you know, that's close. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, if... I think it would be great. I want to build a paragliding parachute that's sort of more like a saddle that you can climb on top of.
But also one that for taking off from the ground.
Yeah. But you could, yes, you could sit on top of it, right? And you can sort of, it bucks and stuff, and you can, I guess, you can whip it if you really want to.
Yeah, is there, I mean, you know what's closer to a wind rodeo is those wind tunnels that you,
oh, they have. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, that blow you up.
Yeah.
And you have a some sort of suit on, a wing suit, and you can sort of hover in it.
You know what's the bit that I never can relax about when I think about those things is about those spinning blades beneath them. You know? And you go, oh, it's great that they're floating, but what about if they fall through that thing into the spinning blades?
Yeah, my gosh. And then and you're like, and don't worry. You're separated from it by several meters of air, you know, that thing that famously is bad.
We've put a little bit of fencing in between you and the thing.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, but...
But, like, you know, if anything went wrong with one of those blades, you think they wouldn't go flying through that fencing like a butter? Like a warm spoon... Through melted butter.
Like a warm spoon through soy sauce.
Mm.
Even easier than going through butter.
Is miso paste, is that just sort of like a butter version of soy sauce, Alistair?
I need
an answer.
I think that I don't know what miso paste is made out of, but it feels like it's more substantial than just salt.
I bet that if you made a butter soy sauce or a soy saucy butter, that would be amazing. People would fucking love that and they would put that on their sandwiches. That could be the new thing. I guarantee. Like you imagine a sandwich that you could just spread buttery soy sauce onto.
That's what Vegemite is.
All right.
You've just invented Vegemite, Andy.
I haven't.
No?
I think it would be different. I don't know how right now.
Because they've made Vegemite that has cheese in it, but they haven't made a Vegemite that already has the butter in there.
That's a no-brainer.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Have to bring a whole stick of butter with you, on your sort of you're on a pack animal.
Mm. Yeah.
A wolf or something like that, and you're traveling through the desert.
Yeah.
You know? And so you gotta travel light, you know?
Because the wolves, they're not beasts of burden.
They're not beasts of burden, so they're already not that happy about carrying you.
Yes. I mean, if we could, you know, it's very hard to get helium balloons to the point where you could actually float around on them in a reasonable way.
Yeah.
Right? You need a lot of helium balloons. Yeah. But you might be able to get enough to reduce your weight enough that we open up whole new species as possible beasts of burden. Right? Once you reduce your body mass or your downward force on the animal with enough with balloons, you could ride almost anything.
That's right. Yeah, yeah. So
and that's exciting.
And as long as they're happy to have the wind resistance slow them down from all the balloons. Do you think that would be worse?
We might have to invent a more streamlined balloon.
Right, like a sausage balloon. A balloon that stays...
I'm thinking one that's pointy, you know, aerodynamic, you know. It's got a...
Like a rocket?
Like a rocket, exactly.
Or like a wing? Do you think it's like a wing?
Yeah, it could be a wing, a vertical wing maybe, or a horizontal wing. There's no reason it couldn't be horizontal.
Oh, yeah, a vertical
no
wing.
No reason.
Andy, we have not come up with a sketch idea yet.
Is this the worst episode of Two in the Think Tank?
I know, but we can't guess at this early stage whether or not it's truly the worst.
No, there's only one way to find out.
Yeah.
And that is to continue all the way through.
Through to the end. Well, I mean, we would need to have a sketch idea in order to even be able to find out whether it's the worst one in terms of the recorded sketch ideas.
Yeah, sure.
Maybe it could just be that my standards have been too high so far. So maybe this is the best Two in the Think Tank episode.
Yeah, it could be.
In terms of the output, the potential output, with my standards this high.
It's unrealized nature.
Okay, right. Wait, we did start talking about the front bottoms. But that's right. And I was going to make a point that front bottom could work for penis if you use it as a coordinate.
Coordinate system, yeah. On the I mean, we've already talked on the podcast about how the bottom isn't really the bottom. It's sort of much more the middle, and your feet are your bottom.
Yeah.
But if we buy into this whole, I mean, if that's true and the bottom really is the bottom, then the feet are well into the negative numbers. Whatever's below the bottom, in the, you know.
Think of the genital region as kind of the horizon or the zero and the axis on the y-axis.
Yeah, the zero and the y-axis, sure.
Do you think of the horizon as being the sort of the zero on the earth axis, y-axis? Because like, you know, there's probably about as much sky as there is ground underneath it, right?
Yeah, I mean, the only problem with that is the curved nature of the Earth, if you believe that, right?
Yeah, yeah, which I do. But it's one of those y-axes where it goes, it would go, you know, sort of 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0 horizon. That's the that's where the land starts in the distance. Right. Mm. And then ground, which is like -1, -2, -3, -4, -5. Then let's say -5 is like the center of the earth.
Okay.
Then it goes, then it starts going -4, -3, -2, -1.
Wow.
And it's like a circular axis because then it's curving back around maybe. And then it rejoins back at zero.
Yeah. Yeah, and then it goes back up again.
Back up again. Now, is this, did I just create a new type of axis?
I think so, yeah. I mean, I think it'd be an interesting way to talk about where things are on the Earth. Instead of using the latitude and longitude, we have a sort of a three-dimensional axis system that maybe starts in the core of the Earth, and we define everything on the relative to that on the shell.
Yeah.
It would be a bit of a nightmare, I think.
You think so?
But it's just the nightmare we need.
But it's kind of hard because, like, so many people, you know, there's more people deep underground now than there's ever been in history's time, you know? Mm. History's time.
Yeah. That's true. We've got people deeper than they've ever been.
And how do we tell people where they are, you know?
We're also probably the deepest mammal.
So we are?
There's no... Yeah.
Yeah. I think we're both probably the highest and the deepest mammal.
The deepest vertebrate.
You think so? Yeah. You think that there's some invertebrates that go a bit deeper?
Well, could be. Could be nematodes or something. What those nematodes are like. Is that
a type of toad?
No, they're tiny worms.
You know, a lot of people think that a nematode is actually a type of toad, but it's not a type of toad at all. Buffaloes actually don't have wings.
This is the guy with the correcting people on things, incorrect things that nobody's getting incorrect.
Yeah. Okay. Let's just write that down. Guy.
Okay. Thank God.
We're on the board, Andy. It took 13.18 minutes.
Yeah. You know, people think that the game of cricket is an insect, but it actually isn't.
They're not playing an insect.
Is this what you're doing? Is this the same guy?
I guess so. Yeah. I think he is the same guy. Yeah.
I feel like mine's even worse than yours is.
Sure. But I mean, like, you know, we could find a way in which, you know, he could think he sounds smart. Now, they're not talking about the insect.
When people talk about the front bottom, everybody thinks that poo comes out of it. It doesn't, actually. If you look closely, no poo comes out.
But if you look really closely, things that don't need to be corrected, look.
Yeah, I mean, but, you know, if that's the front bottom, then that is the, I mean, is the other bottom the back bottom? And is the middle bottom the perineum or the actual bottom?
Yeah.
Or is the back bottom
Yeah.
The back bottom and the front bottom. If it's just the bottom.
It would make the foot the bottom bottom. And it would make the head the top bottom.
The top bottom. That's what I call my mouth. My top
bottom. The top
bottom. My top front bottom. I mean, that's disgusting.
I think that's fine. I think I'm okay with that.
I would almost write that down.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. It's the bottom system.
Front bottom system.
I mean, if, you know, we all know that the human beings are basically just an elaborate anus because we start as an anus when we're developing in the womb. That's the first feature we develop. And it all just goes from there. So it makes sense.
Pores are these now we're getting out of the top and coordinate bottoms, but they're the omni bottoms because they're kind of everywhere. They're kind of everywhere-y. Everywhere-y is how I feel a lot of the time.
Everywhere-y.
Yeah.
It's a great adjective.
Yeah.
It's very God is everywhere-y.
Like, and when you say everywhere-y, are you picturing like W-E-A-R-Y?
No. H-E-R-Y. Everywhere-y. This is what I call God in my illiterate Bible, right? Yeah. I'm rewriting the Bible to take out any word that might be difficult to understand, which is probably a good idea, right? They started out in Latin and then it went into English.
Which was, they made it the most difficult to understand.
Yes. No, they actually did. That was the whole point.
Was it? Okay, so that regular people couldn't do it and then you needed a middleman that you had to pay. You had to give them monthly donations.
Yeah. To translate it for you. But now I'm going to make it dumb it down even further.
A lot of technology is trying to remove the middleman, but actually our company will allow you to put the middleman back in. We're Middleman Inc.
Now, come on down to Middlemania.
Yeah. Now, have you got a transaction that you feel is too easy?
Too streamlined?
It's too streamlined. Well, we could put a man in between you and the thing you're trying to do.
Mm.
Now, at Middleman Inc., when money is transferring hands, how many hands do you want it to pass?
Mm. I think
set of hands to get in between you and your streamlined transaction.
If this sounds like something you'd be interested in, just contact one of our many middlemen, and they will pass it on. I mean,
we have another company that you can contact.
Yeah, no, they that's call, right.
The phone bros. They will pass. Call the phone bros. And they will pass your message on to us, Middleman Inc.
Mm.
Phone bros are joyful graduates of Middleman University, one of our biggest success stories.
Middleman University. Now, yeah, I'm trying to picture it. I mean, because I also think Middleman Inc. is all middlemen. Everyone who works there is a middleman.
Yeah.
It's just people walking around handing each other pieces of paper and saying, can you get this to Greg? This to Greg? I hand it to someone else.
I could picture a lecturer who speaks in, sort of like, Cantonese or something like that, and then he has to have a translator. Mm. And the translator speaks in Portuguese, you see? And that Portuguese translator needs his own translator.
I mean, you could imagine a middleman is it possible for a society to work where everyone is a middleman, or would they have to create some sort of imaginary deity, right? Would they have to create a god who is the ultimate destination of all things? I think if you raised everybody to be middlemen, then they would need to have something to believe in.
But what if you made your society a circle?
Well, see, maybe it's great. Maybe the idea of everyone being middlemen is a utopia.
Yeah, and everybody's doing something for somebody else. It's the opposite.
That's right.
It's the
ego.
Yeah, there's no ego. It's the individual is less important. Even though you're all individuals doing your own thing, you're doing something for everybody else.
And if there's one thing I know from meeting real estate agents, it's that middlemen never have an overblown sense of their own self-importance.
That's right.
And they never delude themselves into thinking that society could function without them.
It's not good. But maybe it's also because they've been given too much power. If everybody was a middleman and you could just switch from that middleman to another middleman straight away, they would their own self-importance would be diminished. If we want a society with low self-importance.
Yeah. I think, in our middleman society, though, it makes me think that maybe everything would be a real estate agent-style transaction, right? So every time you sell anything, you need to hire a real estate,
you're buying a croissant.
Yeah, exactly.
And you meet a guy, you go, "How you going?" Yeah. And he walks you around the bakery and he points the things in the display case.
Yeah, exactly. And I really like that a lot. Yeah. And so the baker has made this really shit croissant. A real estate agent who really hypes it up, gets some photos taken of the croissant that make it look much bigger and fluffier than it actually is. That you can't see it. They Photoshop out the mold on the croissant.
Yeah, he's showing you the croissant on a tablet outside the bakery first, and you're like, "Well, you know, we were looking on the way here," and he's like, "Yeah, we've decided that this is the one we're going to go for." And he's like, "All right, well, would you like to go in and have a look at it?"
Yeah, and then but he gets you to write your name and stuff on a piece of paper first before you go in, gets you all your contact details. Yeah. Then you go in, you walk around the croissant, it's disgusting.
You look at it,
you leave.
But no, then you get a guy who comes in and he's a professional evaluator.
Yeah, great.
And he's like, "Look, it doesn't look good right now, but in this current market, this is probably the best you're going to be able to get for this price.
More or less what you'd expect the condition to be for a croissant of this age.
And in this price range."
And then you in the end, after all of this, you decide not to get it and you go back to just your rental croissant in the suburbs.
Rental croissant?
Yep. That you're paying $2,000 a month for. The metaphor is falling apart.
Because we've turned it all into a croissants instead of houses thing, rather than every transaction is going to be a middleman transaction.
It's a big world of possibility. You know, you go, all these things.
You go into your phone and you go, "All right, let's use Google Maps to get back home," and you click Google Maps like that, and then it goes. He goes, "Hello." You go, "Yes, we're hoping to use the Google Maps app." He goes, "All right. And have you
I'll just get it up on my phone."
Yeah.
And then he describes it to you. All right. Where to go.
Yeah. And then you hear the voice say, "Turn left at the next turn." And he goes, turn left. And then occasionally you hear the voice say something, but you don't hear them say something.
Yeah.
And you go, "Do we need to turn right?" And he goes, "Oh, yeah, sorry."
or he tries to, because he's got to try and create the illusion of his value. So he's like, no. That was something else. And he tries to act like he knows what he's doing, Alistair.
That's right. And then it goes, dung, dung. You can hear that thing.
And then dung, dung. You go to kiss your beloved, but instead you kiss another man on the mouth. And he...
Who's sitting in the back seat.
He tries to remember the kind of kiss you gave him.
Yeah.
And then he kisses your beloved for you.
Sorry, I'm just trying to remember the kind of kiss you gave me. Okay. Sorry, can you kiss me again? Just one more time? Yeah. Okay, yeah, no, I've got it.
Got it. And then he... you see your wife enjoying it. And you're like, I think you're actually... That doesn't look like the kind of kiss... She never enjoys the kisses I give her that much. Are you sure... You're doing the kiss I did to you? Because also when I kissed you like that, you weren't enjoying it as much as she's enjoying the kiss you're giving her. Oh, yes, but she's more into you than I am into you. So it makes sense that she likes the kiss you gave me more than than I did.
And then you start trying to go to this kissing middleman for advice on how to kiss better, but then your wife has to become the middleman. And you go, I'd like to speak to the middleman a little bit about a kissing technique and how I could improve it. And then she goes to the middleman and goes, Michael here is thinking that perhaps that he could learn from you. Anyway, and then, you know, everybody's a middleman, remember?
That's right. I get it. I get it.
But then you see how they all form a relationship, even though, you know, in a weird, different way. And then there's also going to be lots of tension, do you think? Tension?
Oh, that's exciting. Yes. There's all the shows are about complicated three-way relationships these days. All the shows.
All of the shows. The Wire.
Yeah.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I mean, even old shows.
I'm just putting the dog out of the room. Sorry.
Even old shows that have been made, they're now about the complicated three-person relationships. Andy, I want you to know that I've written all of that down. Middleman Inc. and Middleman Society.
Great. I hope that as separate ideas.
Oh, you think so?
Alistair, come on. Okay. Come on. You're telling me that Middleman Inc., right, it gets to have the credit for the croissant idea, for the kissing? Does Middleman Inc. get the credit for the kissing idea? Even the bit where they were swapping around and kissing each other?
Okay. Kissing your wife, middleman. I'll write that one down specifically.
Yeah. I mean, isn't it interesting that if we were in a full middleman society, right, and you were kissing your middleman and your middleman was kissing your wife, and you found out that the middleman was enjoying your kissing more than your wife was, right? So the middleman really likes the kissing. You fall in love with the middleman, right?
And then now, your wife has to become
your wife becomes the middleman. You have to kiss your wife who kisses him. And we know she doesn't like your kissing that much.
Yeah.
And then he falls out of love with you because only getting these secondhand kisses from your wife, who he's not that into.
Yeah. That's really interesting. I think that's a really – oh, Andy. Well, this story is actually getting me going. You know,
I'm feeling getting
my creative juices flowing, Andy.
Is that what they are?
You've absolutely got me. You've absolutely got me completely creatively moistened.
Oh, my top bottom is thrumming.
My top is thrumming. You use that word. It's like people using cunt. Like you use it so sparingly, but you always use it in the perfect moment, so it always has maximum effectiveness. You know, thrumming. Because does it mean like vibrating and kind of?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Because I picture strumming, but without the fingers. You know, it's like a self-strumming thing.
Yeah, it's self-strumming, and there's a little bit of electricity happening as well, I think, you know, for me.
Yeah.
Like little pulses.
I would say it's self-strumming. So that way, that's how you get thrumming.
That's what the thumb strum. That's the thumb strum.
The thumb strum.
In guitaring. Guitaring would be the... The existence of Guitar Hero suggests the existence of Guitar Villain.
Yes, and none of a Guitar Coward.
Oh, and there's another universe in which...
A Guitar Draft Dodger.
Yes, a Guitar Conscientious Objector.
I will not play the guitar.
Well, I'm actually a guitar Quaker, so I am not playing guitar on religious grounds. I am not playing along to the Beatles' greatest hits. This is nothing.
No, this is something. It's just, it's stupid, but it is. It does, you know. Once you create something, then it means other things can now exist because of it.
Correct.
You know, it's not without your grandma. I remember my grandma's 80th. Just being like, 70% of us are here. Maybe like 80% of us here today are only exist because Nana gave birth to a few people.
Yeah.
And you go,
yeah,
oh,
that's true.
It's crazy. You go, whoa. And it's the same thing with the person who created Guitar Hero. The one person who created.
Were you giving a speech? Is that something you said in your speech?
Yeah. I think so.
Great. Did you get any good laughs? Do you have any?
I don't remember that one. Yeah, I think that one. I always feel pretty uncomfortable in front of family members and stuff like that. I don't know if you know this about me, but I tend to, if I'm not in front of somebody I'm very comfortable with, I tend to kind of retreat into myself unless I have planned stuff
to talk about.
Or bits that I've already pre-written.
But you're more uncomfortable around your family members, you think?
Well, extended family, yeah, I would say.
Yeah, right.
Because especially now that I have the label that, you know, the fact that I've been a comedian or whatever, that makes things much, much worse. So then my instinct is to not be funny at all. Because then it can't be criticized. What, you know, like you can't try to be funny and then fail.
Yeah.
And I think I've just uncovered a huge part of my personality that I'm actually making a lot of progress in this in this podcast. What is potentially the best episode of Two in the Think Tank ever due to the high standard for sketches.
Well, that kissing bit earlier was pretty good.
Yeah, of course.
What I like is my sister's friends have decided that they're all just going to call me, funny guy.
Is that what they've decided?
Yeah. And I started to not like, I didn't like it to start with, but now I really like it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like the small amount of contempt, maybe not even that small, that's contained within it.
Yeah, that's good. That is good. I think it's hard having like people who are, you know how like there's some people that just seem conscious and there's some people who seem like NPCs?
And because
you don't see maybe extended family as much and they kind of all work regular jobs, it's kind of easy to see them as NPCs.
Yep.
Right. Yep. And so to have people that are extended, you know, relationships like your sister's friends who tease you like they're conscious human beings, I think, you know, that's probably a better system.
And this is slightly unrelated, but like being tangentially connected to famous people as we are, right?
Yeah.
It is also a bit like sometimes we have a guest star in our lives or somebody just doing a cameo.
Yeah, sure.
You know, when you get to hang out with like a big actor, you're like, oh, they're in this episode.
Yeah, I've had a moment in my life where I had a guest star, Josh Thomas, appear.
Exactly.
Yeah. And so, yeah, it's not that different from, you know, being with somebody who is a TV show.
Yeah. You know, in our lives, Sean McAuliffe had a multi-episode arc.
That's right, yeah.
An occasion. Multi-season.
for how many seasons did we do? 10?
I don't know. I always say 6, but I'm sure it was more than that.
You started like season 9. This is 6 years, you say.
Maybe that's about right. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But it's
Seem like that long, but then I think back and I'm like, I don't remember the start of that. Or when I do remember bits from the start of it, I'm like, I was a wildly different person.
Well, you didn't have any children.
I didn't have any children, but I was just some little guy, you know? I didn't have any of the confidence that I have now.
Yeah, really. Andy, I think you've always had the confidence that you have now.
Probably.
A sort of like dismissive kind of...
That's not true. You haven't. I think in some ways your perception of me is wildly wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No. This is the confidence to be in a conversation with somebody and then go into your laptop and start working and be right in a kind of not negative way. It's actually impressive in that you can do it, but also. But also dismissive of, you know, the people that you're in conversation with while like, I don't have time for this. I have to be working right now. To be working in a public place whilst going into a private mode, you know?
Yeah, sure. I mean, is that confidence or is that maybe something
confidence?
Something wrong with me mentally.
Sure, but that's fine. I think confidence can be something wrong with someone.
Mm. Yeah, it probably is a lot of the
time. I have a lot of problems with people talking about confidence, right? They say, oh, you should do this because it makes you look more confident and things like that. You go, it doesn't seem to me like confidence is anything more than a trick.
Mm. Yeah, all confidence is a trick. Talk about confidence tricks. Confidence, that's a trick.
Yeah, so people are like, well, you know, you don't seem confident if you do that. You go, it doesn't matter. I'm not confident. You don't.
People have an accurate impression of me.
I don't think you need to be confident to to achieve things. You just need to do the things, right?
No, but confidence is a kind of because sometimes you need other people to believe you can do the things, right? And that's what the confidence is, right?
Well,
and it's
I don't know if that is the confidence. That can be a track record, right? It can be a track record. I mean, in the absence of a track record, I think confidence helps. But having evidence that you can do the thing is the alternative to pretending or looking like you can do the thing.
Yeah, but also once you as a species, once you invent confidence, right? There's an evolutionary advantage to people who are able to just look confident without having anything to back it up, right? Because they haven't wasted any of the, you know, it's like animals that look like poisonous animals without being poisonous,
yeah.
Right? They mimic something. So they don't have to do all the work, expend all the energy of actually making the poison. They can just...
Yes, yeah. But those are great for short relationship interactions, right? So, you know, if, for example, you look poisonous and you're not poisonous, right? That's great if you are going to interact with a thing and then you never see it again.
Sure.
Right? Because if it somehow discovers that you're not poisonous or it meets another one like you and accidentally eats it or something like that, and then it goes, oh, these are not poisonous. That's great.
Or these ones are actually delicious.
These are actually the most delicious things, right? And the same thing, that if you have the confidence and then you get the thing, you get the job, and then you don't have any of the skill, then you may not get hired again. And then the confidence actually becomes you are a fucking insane person who acts confident when you've got nothing.
Yeah. But, you know, would it be funny to for everybody to know that this person is a fraud for whatever reason, but to continue to keep them around because they like the confidence? You know, like
his confidence.
Yeah. You know, like,
yeah, I do like that.
Have a long term relationship with somebody, right? Who's completely hollow. They've got nothing to back up anything they say, and they keep letting everybody down, right? But the confidence is enough, and they continue to be, you know, maybe it could be part of your friendship group, somebody you just have around. Maybe it would be quite useful, right, to have somebody with a lot of confidence that you could use in your group when you need them. Then it's a valuable skill.
I mean, I think in this case, it can be a valuable skill, like when you watch a terrible program and you go, well, if these people who write like this can get a TV show up, then that really boosts your motivation. And to think that if there's somebody who is your superior at a big corporation who has no skills whatsoever but lots of confidence, that would make you try, because you're like, well, if he can get promoted, then maybe I can too.
That's great. I think that's a lovely dynamic to have in a business. They've got this guy, everybody knows he's bad, but it motivates the staff so much. It's created this really positive work environment. Productivity is through the roof. This fucking idiot. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, great.
I was thinking about the poisonous animals thing. And there's this interesting thing where, like, the poisonous animals, they're never camouflaged, right? They're always super bright, crazy colors that are highly, highly visible. And I'm losing my grip on the thought, but there's this weird two-way relationship between being clear,
but like being deadly but not afraid, like not needing to camouflage, like just like being right in your face. Yeah, I'm so deadly.
Right,
like, there is a confidence to that.
Yeah, but also if you were really bright like that, you would have to be poisonous in order to get away with it. Mm. So, like, you know, there could be like an evolutionary advantage for predators to, when they see something really, when it's really easy to catch something, when something's really visible, they're like, well, not that one, obviously. I don't want that one. I want something that's hard to get.
Yeah. So you could imagine, like, let's say for some reason, if, you know, predators, like, you know, big carnivorous animals started to enter our society, and for some reason we weren't able to stop it. They were able to breed very, very quickly and things like that, and it just became a huge issue. Nature has turned on us due to what we've done to the climate and all that kind of stuff. Anyway, you could imagine for some reason that tradies, people who are wearing a lot of fluoro,
high vis
and stuff like that, suddenly are surviving at greater rates because the animals aren't even bothering to attack them because they just assume that they're highly poisonous.
Yeah, but also, you know, a lot of the time, tradies might have a lot of muscular strength and access to portable power tools. So maybe they would be able to defend themselves.
Sure.
And then maybe there'd be an evolutionary advantage for the rest of us to start dressing like tradies and talking like tradies, even though we're not tradies and we don't have any of the tradie genetics.
Sure, yeah. I mean, but in this case, I was just saying it's because of the poison thing, because that's what they've grown up to learn in the wild.
Yes, no, I agree.
Yeah,
I agree.
But
in it, you can also imagine, though, that like if the way that we'd communicated this to predators that we're poisonous wasn't through bright colors, but was through some other thing that made you very visible, right, or very noticeable. So you might
singing and dancing.
That's exactly what I was thinking. that in the wild, there are some frogs that. All frogs look pretty bland and, you know, boring, dull colors. But there are some frogs that are very like, yoo-hoo! Or possibly, maybe that's the evolutionary story of Michigan J. Frog. That's why he was Come on, my honey. Come
yeah,
on,
he was
my
singing
darling.
Like that because he's actually quite a poisonous toad or whatever.
Mm.
Be crazy if he was a toad and his name was Michigan J. Frog.
A nematode, yes.
But also, you know, you hear a lot of about, you know, people who are in the sort of the singing and dancing business as being quite toxic a lot of the time. It's quite a toxic culture.
There you go. Maybe that's it.
I wonder. Andy, I have at least 5 sketch ideas. So would you consider, and stop me if I'm getting ahead, if I was to go to 3 words from a listener?
I think it would be a mercy, Alistair, for all concerned.
Great. Well, these 3 words come from Amazing Mike Lee.
Amazing Mike Lee?
And for those who don't know, you know, 3 words from a listener, well, that's if you join our Patreon. You know, you can suggest 3 words. You just send it to us through the Patreon, and then I eventually find them, and then we do them on this thing. Now, Mike Lee has sent in 3 words, and he was wondering if you could guess them. Maybe starting with the first one?
Hippopotamus.
Definitely not. No, the first one is dance.
Okay.
No.
Dance?
Yeah.
Okay, the second word is also dance. It's dance, dance, evolution is the 3 words.
No, you're incorrect with the second one.
Oh.
But with the third one, you've definitely started with the right letter.
Oh.
So it's dance-based.
Dance-based. It's not dance-based evolution, is it? Because that is just what we were discussing.
No, it's not. No.
Economy. Dance-based economy.
Andy, it is dance-based economy.
Of course it is, because that's the kind of shit we would come up with. He knows us.
It's amazing to be known.
He's feeding us the food that we like.
Now that, Andy, you and I have shared a brain, you know, after doing this podcast for so long,
yeah,
it's only makes sense because listeners hear as much of us talking as we do.
Mm, yeah.
And so therefore they are going to start sharing your brain.
Mm, so our contagious brain, like that dog, contagious dog genital cancer.
Yeah.
That's our brains.
But imagine
now.
That's contagious brain. If you put like, kind of like nits, if you put your head too close to another person, your brain goes out through your eyes or ears or whatever, little chunks. Mm. Come out and they get into the other people's brains and they start turning it into your brain.
It's a great concept for a horror movie. It's a new kind of zombie or Invasion of the Body Snatchers type thing where it's just one individual with a contagious sort of personality or identity that is through some sort of brain molecules spreading through the population. So you end up with a lot of people who they're actually just that person pretending to be the person they were.
Yeah. You know? Like, but they,
so like a bad impersonation of the person. Like if your beloved became, got infected with this, it would turn into this person doing an impersonation of your beloved. If they're trying to hide,
and,
that is.
And I suppose if you were doing this movie and you did it with someone like Christopher Walken, he was like patient zero.
Yeah.
And then
that's good.
And then all the people are doing impersonations of Christopher Walken. I think that's a movie that would sell.
Yeah, I think that's great. It's a bit being John Malkovich, but
it's
also not.
Very different. It's very different. We don't have any of the depth.
Don't worry, that's how we pitch it in the meeting. Don't worry if you think this is like being John Malkovich. It has none of the depth. I can see why you think that, but this one, it doesn't mean anything. It's not trying to say anything. You know how being John Malkovich, you discover more things in it every time you watch it? Not with this one. You find less and less. But hang on, we were saying something else. Oh, yeah. No, I pretend to do that with my children. I pretend that my brain jumps out of my head.
Yeah.
and squelches around on the dinner table and then jumps into their head.
Wow, and then they start acting like you?
Yeah, but they actually hate that game. It really stresses them out.
Right, because of the brain jumping out of your head?
Yeah, I think they feel bad for my brain.
Yeah, sure.
Squelching around on the table.
Have you ever showed them that super dry or whatever ad where the tongue comes out of the extra dry, maybe? Was it extra dry where the tongue falls out of the mouth?
Yeah. Amazingly, we never have. We never have spent any time watching beer ads together from the early 2000s.
I know. The other day I showed my kid. Well, I showed because my kids were talking about the Titanic, but this was before any Titanic stuff was relevant. It's just another kid had talked about Titanic. And so then suddenly the idea of like disasters started kind of being around. And then I showed Otis a video of 9/11. And then I went, and then as soon as I started to go,
whoa!
I went, oh, this is too early to talk about 9/11.
Alistair, oh my god. You know, fortunately, it's one of the few disasters which has its own, it has an appropriate age range built into the name of the disaster.
That's really good. And I would wait closer to 11, I think.
Yeah.
You just don't need to know about it. It's like, as soon as it was like, but what happened to the people who were flying it? And I go, oh, yeah, this is actually too intense to talk about. I didn't even show the towers falling. It was just one going into the building. The first
one. Alistair, I cannot believe that you thought this was a fucking hell.
Yeah. I'm pretty advanced, so it's, it's this kind of advanced parenting where I get the terror into them really early.
My kid's in an accelerated program of learning about the
terror,
the horrors of reality.
Yeah. I haven't told him about climate change, though, but 9/11, you got to get onto that.
My kid is jaded at a university level.
It's funny because when you talk about the Titanic, people don't really think about that much about the people that died. You kind of just go, oh, whatever. I mean, I guess you do. You do think about it.
Yeah, I think about it a bit.
Yeah.
When I think about the running along the corridors, that stresses me out.
Yeah, the falling. That bit feels like a nightmare. The falling when the boat tilts up and that kind of stuff. But I would think I would have been one of those people who got a really good spot and held on pretty tight, and
I would have been okay.
Yeah,
I genuinely feel I would have been okay.
Yeah,
that's crazy.
I mean, when a boat starts, angling, I have a pretty good instinct on where to run and hide behind. But I do worry about my wife.
What's she gonna do?
Looks
after her.
I genuinely have this feeling that if I was in a Titanic type situation, I worry about whether or not Indiana would get into the right spot, even though I think that we'd probably be running together.
Yeah,
you know, but I'd be like
I'd be a bit ahead, probably, just because I'm a little bit faster.
I like to believe that this wouldn't happen. She feels like a faller. I have to tell her I said this now. I already feel guilty. all right. We got to go to dance-based economy.
Yeah, dance-based economy. It feels like if you were paying for something with a dance, presumably the dance would involve a certain number of moves, right? It would be a set amount of dance. And then they'd have to give you your change, which would be, to a smaller, to break down a few of those moves.
Imagine if it was even just social economy. Like, think of it imagine if instead of a wave, right, when you see somebody – and we didn't have one move. It was, you have to make up a new move. And
that is interesting.
You have to give them a personalized thing. And the more effort you put into it, the more reverence you're paying, the more respectful it is.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the wave, it really is, it is a dance move, yeah. right, that has made it in the real world.
Yeah.
It's a crossover success.
Absolutely, yeah.
Like something from the country charts that makes it into the Billboard charts. It went from dance into just general communication. And, you know, maybe other things like, you know, high fives and, you know, those little,
sure.
you know, some people have elaborate high fives. That's a type of small, you know, two-person dance.
Yeah, I mean, a high five is amazing that it also kind of, it could be said to have come from the clapping world.
yeah.
You know, which is, you
but
know,
maybe,
might have been
maybe
from.
Maybe clapping was a dance.
Maybe clapping was a dance. It could have crossed over from the bug-killing world, though, into, you know, I think clapping is one of the bug-killing methods yeah. that has crossed over into the mainstream. Well, not, it's almost a path that's been, that they kind of, they blazed that path and then probably nuked it and made it, like, you know, impossible for anything else. Any other
to come from bug killing?
Yeah,
yeah. There's not much else from yeah. bug killing. You know, wearing a big backpack and spraying poison all over the floor yeah, hasn't really made it.
Yeah, no.
Hasn't made it.
Stomping has a little bit, you know,
yeah.
as a way of for like a child to express anger.
Yeah. Okay.
But oh, actually, more that's made it into dance.
Yeah.
Maybe as a way to try to make it into the mainstream because it realizes it wasn't going to be able to make it in into the mainstream through bug killing anymore.
It's interesting. Maybe all the big innovation in gestures.
Yeah.
Maybe we can trace it all back to bug killing.
Yeah. yeah. I mean, you know, malaria is one of the biggest killers, you know, worldwide. Yeah. And so mosquito killing is a huge... You know, it's an important thing.
Absolutely.
And so it is, you know, I mean, I can't imagine what it's like to live in a country with malaria and hear a mosquito while you're laying in bed.
Yeah. Oh, Alistair, that's right in my ears, man. That's really horrible. I'm right there and I'm feeling really stressed out.
You know, that thing, and then you like slap the side of your head because you're like, oh, it's right next to my ear now. And you slap it, and then you just hear.
This would be a good.
Yeah.
Do you think we could make a creature feature horror movie with a mosquito? You're just a single mosquito.
One mosquito.
Yeah. And I mean, it'd be amazing for our effects budget. You know, we just need to hear that. That sound.
Yeah.
And, you know, it would be, and it would be a bit like a Quiet Place or something like that, because you wouldn't want to be in an environment with any noise, because then you would not be able to hear the mosquito coming,
yeah.
right? So you'd be trying to, like, make everything as silent as possible. This is a really good idea.
Yeah.
And then, you know, when everything is as silent as possible, then you hear that sound.
But also that somebody has, like, an almost instant reaction to it. Like, it's either like a vomiting disease or like an instant dying disease.
Exactly. Yeah. 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 I mean, it would probably be pretty horrible, right? You'd be seeping and weeping and, you know, pus and blisters and stuff that
sure.
just happens.
Sure.
You know.
Love that. Kind of a bit like, you know, that one, that disease from Outbreak, that movie where they kind of bleed from the eyes and stuff like that.
The movie's called Buzzkill.
Oh, that's really good. Fuck! Turn on the light!
And everybody slapping each other.
Yeah. I guess if you kept moving like that, you'd be like, you know, maybe you're just like, you know, people are sitting under like,
yeah.
under
well,
sort of.
It's also a bit like, it's also a bit like Nightmare on Elm Street because you can't sleep, right?
Yeah.
It gets you when you sleep.
Yeah.
Oh, it'd be so good.
But it's just one and it's in town.
Yeah, exactly.
Or you're at a campsite.
No, you need to be around in an environment with lots of sources of noise and
oh yeah, okay.
stuff, I think. For that aspect, which is not, you know, that's not a deal breaker for me, Alistair.
Yeah. No,
don't
no.
take me off the project. Don't take me off the project.
Well, you know, you could have a, like, you know, there's a family up there, you know, up you know, up that are doing like setting off fireworks or something like that, and then you end up having a huge confrontation with them.
Yeah,
and then there's more threats of violence from there, and you're like, just fucking the mosquitoes here.
Yeah, and that's our real enemy.
And then you see the mosquitoes, one of them start to vomit or whatever.
And then you're trying to shoot the mosquito with the fireworks.
Yeah.
There's all this friendly fire. You're hitting everybody else.
That's great. Especially one of those tube ones there that lets out like poof, poof. That would be kind of cool. Fun. You see it land on somebody's face and you dive for the fireworks and then you aim it at their face.
Yeah, that's horrifying.
It's pretty good. Yeah. I think that within the year. Oh, wait, we got to write Buzzkill. Buzzkill. The singular mosquito horror film.
Hmm. It's probably been done.
Yeah?
Yeah, everything's been done.
Yeah, well,
but
not the
I'm
way
excited.
That we've done it. We've got a lot of scenes already, Andy.
Yeah, and the pieces are all there.
And that guy says that all you need is 70 scenes. All you need is you just get an index card and you just write a scene. And then once you have somewhere something like 60 or 70 scenes, then you've got a feature film.
Hey, Alistair, that's actually quite inspiring. That's good advice.
Yeah, well, that's what's his name? Who sounds like what I was just doing.
Robert something?
No. It was just David Lynch.
Oh, right. Oh. That guy. Oh, David Lynch. Yeah, that does sound like David Lynch. Good job.
Thank you. Hello. It is April 5th, Friday. It is sunny. Beautiful day. Anyway. All right. Shall I take us through the sketch ideas?
Yeah, thank you.
We've got guy who corrects things that don't need to be corrected. Andy, it's not our greatest, but it got us on the board.
Yes.
And I think we could have a lot of fun with this guy. We got the front bottom system. Mouth is the top bottom. Feet are the bottom bottom.
Yes.
We got Middleman Inc. This is when we really started getting moving. and including Middleman University, right? And this is a company that will add middlemen to your transactions.
Mm-hmm.
Then we have Middleman Society, where everyone is a middleman. Kissing your wife, middleman. Then maybe eventually kissing your middleman through your wife.
Kissing your wife. That's a middleman.
That's a middleman. Everything's a middleman. Then we got guitar conscientious objectors. And of course, in the guitar coward world, you know, that kind of thing. Then we got keeping someone around who has nothing to back up their confidence, but you like their confidence. And then having them as like your superior because others think
it's
that
inspiring.
they could get promoted because they're inspired by how garbage this person is and how the fact that they could succeed.
It could be a scene in which there's this boss who's really terrible, right?
Yeah.
And but then in a private moment talking to somebody else, they reveal that all of their incompetence is just part of like this advanced level management strategy in which you inspire your workers by making them have contempt for you.
Yeah, that's interesting. I like that a lot. Should I write in brackets? Could be big ruse.
With the contempt management strategy. Yeah. Hey, man, you know what? You know what they say about inspiring contempt? It's inspiring. At least you're inspiring. Well, you say I inspire contempt? You know what I hear?
I'm inspiring.
People find me inspiring.
Then we have the using singing and dancing to communicate that you're poisonous. Then we've got contagious brain. Christopher Walken is patient zero, and everyone.
Yes. The Christopher Walken dead.
The Christopher Walken dead. Wow. The Christopher Walken alive.
Hey.
Moves. Making it into the mainstream from dancing and killing bugs. And then, of course, Buzzkill, the singular mosquito horror film.
Correct. Hello and goodbye.
Hello. Hello and goodbye. All right, you can always follow us on Twitter at Two and Tank or at Alistair TB or at Stupid Old Andy. You can find us on Instagram at Two and Tank. You can find me at A Trombley Birchall.
We're looking at getting onto Blue Sky.
If anyone's got an invite, I would love to get onto Blue Sky.
I want to get on there and I want to get our handles. You know.
Oh yeah,
get our handles.
Yeah, I want to get a handle on this Blue Sky. And if anybody has a Blue Sky invite, can you send it to us?
Please.
We're trying to get started while it's small before it becomes the society's town square.
That's right.
I can't wait. I'm looking forward to it. You can always listen to the Do Go On podcast or the Weekly Planet. You know, they got good things.
Who knew it with Matt Stewart? Buy Gustav and Henry, Volume 1 or Volume 2. And you know what? If you want to get in touch with me directly, I'll send you a copy.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. We can come to an arrangement.
Wow, an arrangement. You should message Andy. Mm. If anything, if you know, at the very least, it's just a great opportunity to interact with Andy.
There you go. I'll take it.
You can send me a message. I don't have anything to send you. And I've did you know somebody contacted me from based off of the book Cheat Pod? And she was like, oh, sent me a page of White Noise, which was an episode I did on, I talked about, Noise being my favorite book. And she sent me the front page of her White Noise copy so I could sign it. And it's been 3 years and I haven't managed to get it back to her.
So she sent you the front page. It's like she cut out the front page.
Yeah. Cause she was going to send me the whole book to sign. And then she was like, actually, that's going to be super expensive to post. And so then, at one point I managed to send it and it was like 2 years in and then it came back because I didn't fill out something properly.
Oh my God.
It was insane. Anyway, I'm trying to get it back to her. Tamed Shrew. That's how she's communicated. That's the name she's communicated with me as.
And we
love.
You.
Bye. See ya.
Thank you. Bye. Thank you.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.